Yesterday, we kicked off the St. Louis International Film Festival with a visit from John Sayles, who was in town to show off his new movie called Honey Dripper last night, the first of more than 200 movies that will be shown over 10 days at the festival here in St. Louis. Today, we have two more movie makers, both of whom have slightly closer connections to St. Louis. One of them is Ryan Esslinger, who grew up in Chesterfield. You were born in Alton, Illinois, but grew up in Chesterfield, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and you've got a movie you're premiering tonight, which is only your second movie. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's the second movie.
It's called When a Man Falls in the Forest.
That's correct.
And we'll talk about that in just a moment. Also here is a man who has a little more experience than you.
Much more experience.
James Gunn. In fact, the total number of Scooby-Doo movies he's written equals all the movies you've ever done.
Oh, God. Gee, thanks, Paul.
It's true, isn't it? You wrote both Scooby-Doo movies.
I did. I wrote both Scooby-Doo movies, and then tonight we have Slither showing. We're competing, but I think that if for all the people that have no class, they should come see my movie.
Yeah,
and if you have a classy bone in your body, you got to stay away from Slither tonight at Webster.
James is from Manchester and went to SLU High. Ryan is a graduate of Parkway Central High School. So we got a couple of St. Louis guys, one who's just beginning to make it big and one who's already made it pretty big, and I'm sure will continue to do so. And that's all the time we have, guys. Thanks for coming.
See you later, Paul.
That sounded like I was wrapping it up, didn't it? No, not at all. Let's talk about your movie, Ryan. When a Man Falls in the Forest, is it true that this movie would not have been made if it were not for Sharon Stone?
I would hope that it would have found its way to be made. But no, at this particular point, it wouldn't have been made.
So how do you get a movie, once you've made one movie, which, by the way, was not distributed widely, Did it ever make it to your old stomping grounds at the West Hollow 16?
No, it didn't. I don't know how you know it worked there. That's
I know
crazy.
Everything about you. I am James Lipton. Yeah. I just don't have the blue cards. You took tickets at the West Hollow 16,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, concession, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you probably took my ticket at some point. So that's how I know.
Yeah.
But how does a guy go from that to making a movie that did not get distributed to places like the West Hollow 16 to, hey, Sharon Stone wants to co-produce my movie?
She saw the first movie that I made because it was through my agency. They handed the movie off to her, and she watched it and liked it, and then I gave her the script for the second one.
Mm-hmm. The first movie was called Madness and Genius.
Yes.
Which I understand you started coming up with the concept for right around the time you hit puberty.
About 13, yes, I guess that would be, yeah.
Yeah.
I started writing it, and then it went through a bunch of variations, and over about 8 years of writing it, I kind of figured out exactly the story I wanted to tell.
James, were you writing movies when you were 13?
I was, actually. I started making movies when I was 12 years old. I started, my first film I ever made was, I disemboweled my brother Sean.
Hasn't done that? I just didn't film it. I didn't know you were allowed to film that.
I think you're misinterpreting what disemboweled means.
No. I'm the older brother. I know exactly what disemboweled means.
It's not a wedgie.
Yeah. So that was my first movie ever was a zombie film. And then, I've sort of haven't matured at all since I was 12. Stayed in exactly the same genre.
And besides the Scooby-Doo movies and Slither, you're partly responsible for Dawn of the Dead.
I wrote Dawn of the Dead and wrote and directed Slither and did a movie called Lolly Love, a movie called The Specials, a movie called Troma and Juliet was my first film.
Yeah, you actually were part of the Troma factory, weren't you?
Yeah, I was the head of production at Troma Studios for 2 years. The Troma Studios is the world's oldest independent film studio, B-movie, known for sex, violence, and toxic waste. And I went in for a job while I was still in school at Columbia and thought I was going to get a job, maybe if I was lucky, filing papers or something. And instead, Lloyd Kaufman, the head of Troma, offered me $150 to write a screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my entrance into the film industry.
Which is the hardest part at Troma, making the movie or not laughing as you sit down and write titles first? Because it seems to me like the title, isn't one of them Chopper Chicks in Zombie Town?
Yeah, Chopper Chicks in Zombie Town, Nymphoid Barbarian in Dinosaur Hell. There's a lot of redneck zombies. There's a million of them. Classes Nukem High.
But is it true that you sit down?
Lloyd's going to love me for saying all these online. He's going to owe me a penny for every one of those. If I can't get residuals from the studios, at least I'll get some from Lloyd.
But is it true that you write the title first and then say, okay, now we got to turn that into a movie?
Well, honestly, Lloyd said, hey, I have this idea for a movie. It's Tromeo and Juliet. And he actually had a script, which was basically just you know, Romeo and Juliet rewritten verbatim with fart jokes thrown in. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of threw that away and made it a different story, but I didn't come up with the idea of Romeo and Juliet. I don't have that quite that genius.
Mm-hmm. Has anybody at Troma actually read Shakespeare?
Only to transcribe the scripts into scripts for Troma. Outside of that, I don't think so. I don't think any of them have read, period.
You'll be showing Slither, your 2006 classic. That'll be tonight at Webster University.
Yeah.
And you're also getting an award.
Yeah.
The Cinema St. Louis Award. Congratulations
on
that.
Yes. It's like one of those little football trophies that you get when you're in sixth grade.
Well, let me just check something. How many other people have a movie award of any kind? None. I see no hands.
No, I'm not making fun of the Cinema St. Louis Award.
It's
awesome. It's a great honor. I'm excited. You know, a couple of great people have gotten this award. So, I believe Ken Kwapis has gotten in George mm-hmm. and Liber. So I'm very excited to be back here and receiving it.
Now, Ryan, it's something for you to shoot for, right?
Oh, yeah.
Someday you'll have the award he doesn't want. The
yeah,
trophy
exactly.
The trophy that'll just go into a box when they give it to him. Thanks, I'm not putting this one on the mantle.
Oh, no,
I think
no,
that's what he was saying to the people at Cinema St. Louis. Call me when it's an Oscar.
This is everything negatively, doesn't it?
I'm kidding. No, congratulations on that. Let's talk again about Sharon Stone, Ryan. Let's get back to her.
Okay. Now, seriously, how does Sharon Stone look these days? Is she looking all right?
Very, good question,
yeah.
James.
Very the wrong guy to ask, though.
I know. He's got to say yes. We share a casting director. His movie has the same casting director as Slither.
Uh-huh. But you ended up with snakes, and he got Sharon Stone.
What's wrong with you? I got Elizabeth Banks and Tanya Stone. I got some good-looking women.
Oh, yeah, you did.
I do.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so back to Sharon Stone. Her agent gives her your movie, Madness and Genius.
Yeah.
She looks at the DVD of it or whatever, and she likes it. And then does the phone ring one day, and, hi, it's Ryan. Hello, Ryan, it's Sharon.
No, what happened, my agent
By the way, I don't do imitations, as you've just seen.
Terrible impression.
That's pretty good, though.
Sorry, go ahead.
She saw my first movie, my agent set up the meeting, and then I just went over to her house and met with her.
And what's that like? I'm not letting you get by with any of this. We're talking Sharon Stone here. I want to know what that's like when you... Okay, so you drive up to Sharon Stone's house and the staff lets you in.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a big gate and everyone has a gate. And yeah, you go in and mm-hmm. yeah, and she was, I think, like an hour late or something like
that.
Oh, really? To that effect, yeah.
So you're sitting in Sharon Stone's house for an hour?
Just in her living room, yeah, just checking out all her stuff.
Looking for mirrors.
let me just explain one thing here.
No, not that.
Checking out all her stuff has a different connotation when we're talking about Sharon Stone.
Yeah, no, I'm talking
her
about...
Her stuff.
We've all checked out her stuff already in Basic Instinct.
Who hasn't checked out her stuff?
No, not that.
Who hasn't freeze-framed it? Let's be honest.
I'm talking about the books that she has.
All right. And so you're there, and then she walks in.
Yeah. And then we talked for a couple hours about, she had a script that she wanted to write. It was a separate project that she wanted me to work on, and I had this thing that I gave to her at a later point. I don't even know if I brought it up during the first meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually a meeting about another idea that she had that she wanted to be made into a movie.
And is that so? You may have a two-picture deal with Sharon Stone.
It's not a deal. I don't know if it's a deal or anything like that. It's just she had this idea and wanted me to write it for her. So I wrote a draft, and then it wasn't very good, and so I scrapped it and tried to write. And in the process of writing it again.
But in the meantime, she co-produced and co-stars in When a Man Falls in the Forest, which will be shown at the St. Louis Art Museum tonight at 7:30 as part of the St. Louis International Film Festival. And what's it about?
It's about four different characters. One of them's a janitor who gets obsessed with lucid dreaming, and he works at this office where the character played by Timothy Hutton works. He's having problems with his wife, who's Sharon Stone, and then Tim also has a friend who got... It sounds more depressing than it is, but Tim has a friend who had gotten a car accident and had killed this girl, and his life has sort of been in this stasis ever since.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, it sounds depressing, but I tried to not make it.
It's about three or four people who all have different lives. Do their lives intersect?
Yeah.
All four?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The movie kind of jumps around with all these different characters. Yeah.
When do they fight and kill each other?
At the end, yeah. There's people die. Oh, yeah.
Awesome. I think what he meant was who gets disemboweled.
Yeah. Nobody gets disemboweled, yeah.
But if Troma does it, then, yeah. Then that'll be in it. Well, good luck with it.
Thank you.
Now, will this one be projected onto big-time movie screens at some point?
I don't know. I think it's actually – it's kind of got the staggered – I don't understand exactly how they released because I think it got like a theatrical in Spain or France or Croatia, I think, or some random countries.
That's the standard route for movies.
Yeah. So,
you know,
yeah.
I did a screening of the new Redford movie this week. I'm pretty sure it had to show in Croatia before it was allowed to come to the United States.
Yeah.
But there's no definite release date here in the U.S.?
I think there is. I don't think, as far as I know, it's not getting a theatrical in the States. I think it's just going straight to DVD in the States. But that's going to be in February.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in other countries, I don't know. I don't know. I can't travel around all these different places.
Right. Well, good luck with it. And
thank you.
And I guess the important thing for you now is, as you've set the precedent of you did one movie, and somebody saw the DVD of it and said, let's do another movie.
Yeah.
Now you want people to see the DVD of this and say, you know, has that happened yet? Do you know what your next movie project is?
Well, I've written a bunch of stuff, and I'm trying to get the next one made, but it's not even done yet. I'm hopefully going to be done with it pretty soon.
Pretty good for a guy who's not even a decade out of high school.
Yeah.
Ryan Esslinger has his new movie called When a Man Falls in the Forest. It's got Sharon Stone and Timothy Hutton and Pruitt Taylor Vance and Dylan Baker. It's going to show at 7:30 tonight at the St. Louis Art Museum. And will you be there doing a Q&A afterwards?
Yeah. Is that what that is? I think it's before and after,
Okay. Yep. And James Gunn is also here. He is going to be at Webster University tonight showing his movie from last year, the big hit Slither. And he'll also be getting the Charles Guggenheim Cinema St. Louis Award. And I got an email from someone in California who listens to this show online about you and says, please congratulate him on the Cinema St. Louis Award. And please talk a little bit with James about the writer's strike, because it'd be nice to hear this discussed from the perspective of somebody who works the whole spectrum of writing, directing, acting, and producing.
Right. Yeah, I think it's, you know, the I wrote a blog about the strike on my MySpace page, which anybody can read. It just has the basics of it. But here, the real basics of it are this. The writers, years ago, we had a deal with the studios with TV residuals. We got decent TV residuals. Still today, to this day, most of my money would be made off of TV residuals.
The more reruns of shows that you've written air.
Yeah, and like when a movie airs on TV, I get paid a certain amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
When DVD and VHS started coming out, VHS first, they made a deal with the studio. They said, hey, it's a nascent form. Maybe, you know, we may not make any money off of this, so we're going to give you guys a really rotten deal, but work with us and we'll make the deal better. So we have a pretty bad deal on DVD and VHS residuals.
How'd that work out?
Because you can always trust the mega conglomerates. They're always in it for the little guy.
When we get really, really rich, we'll get back to you.
Yeah.
That never works out if you're you.
No. And I will say the DGA made that deal, not the WGA.
Okay.
So so they made a very bad deal. You know, so our residuals went down because, of course, as time went on, much more of the business was done on VHS and DVD and not in TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, the second time a person sees a product. Now, with new media, with online downloads through Amazon or iTunes or whatever, we get 0% of that.
Mm-hmm.
So every time they rerun a TV show. For instance, Lost doesn't even show reruns on the air. They go directly to the internet.
Same thing with 24.
We get the same thing.
No
with
reruns.
We get no money off of that. So this strike is not about... you know, making more. It is simply about trying to make as much as we already do. It's not a strike about the rich getting richer. In fact, I'm going to be hurt a lot by the strike, more so than helped. But it's worth it supporting it because your average writer, your middle-class writers, and most writers are middle-class, need that money from residuals, that few thousand dollars a year they make when they're in between gigs to put, you know, food on the table, to be able to pay their rent. And that's what this is about. This is simply about the writers making, and also, by the way, it's about writers and directors and actors, because whatever deal the writers cut is the same deal that the directors and the actors are going to get, making some small amount of money off of the residuals of internet downloads.
And by the way, it has a small impact on those of us in the radio business. We're part of a union also, the American Federation of Television Radio Artists, and our content that we provide for radio stations like KMOX is also being distributed in these other media that you're talking about. And of course, you know, we're in contract negotiations now, and what does the company say? Look, we don't really know how to monetize this or turn it into anything, and we don't know how much money we're going to make off of it, but when we do figure that out,
that's right,
we'll get back to you.
That's exactly what they're saying, and they did it to us last time, and you know, they'll fool me once. You know, it's
I can't get fooled again.
That's the who. The So I mean, it's really something I feel very strongly about. I'm completely behind the WGA. I'm with the WGA. I'm on strike. I'm in the middle of writing a project for Ben Stiller right now that I have to drop out of for the time being because of the strike, and that hurts me a lot. I'm bummed out about it. I was really enjoying it. But it's pens down. I'm not writing.
Yeah. I know a lot of people are hurt by this. You know, Frank Caliendo has a new show that's supposed to come on TBS at the end of the month. It's going to go on Thanksgiving week. You might have seen it mentioned a few times during the TBS coverage of the World or the playoffs.
Just a little.
The postseason. It was only on every 14 seconds. But here's a guy who was going to do a whole season of shows starting then, and now they've told him, well, you've written four. Let's do those, and that'll be it.
Yeah, and it breaks my heart. It's very, very difficult to see the guys. I have a young friend who was about to have his first – he just had his first movie sold, his first pitch sold. And now he can't have it. He started to have, finally in his career, after 8 years of kicking it out there, trying to do the best he can, he finally gets some heat on him, and then this happens. Not only that, the crew people, the fact that the Teamsters aren't crossing the picket line, those guys are great. And all of these people are supporting the strike, but there's a lot of people being hurt from it. And I talk about it in the blog. I say, you know, it's not only those people, but it's the waiters and the waitresses in the Burbank area because production's shutting down. It's the local strip clubs. And so I say, you know, on behalf of all the strippers, it's important that the studios settle and end this strike.
Yeah, because if these writers could just make $1 more from downloads, that would go in your G-string.
That's right. There are a lot of empty G-strings in the L.A. area. And the strippers don't know what to do because they're walking. It's too light.
Yeah.
They're not used to being so light.
I would contend that there have always been a lot of empty G-strings in the L.A. area. But Ryan, this doesn't affect you at all, does it?
No, it doesn't. Well, I mean, I'm not writing anything for hire. I'm not like a scab or anything. But I just write my own stuff. You know, you can't get it made or anything like that. But yeah, no, I haven't written.
So you just wait till the strike is over, and then you go and say, guess what? While all those guys weren't writing, I came up with something.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't. Yeah, exactly. It's like, but you kind of. I don't know if you're considered a scab. Like, it's like I can't actually. You can't physically sell anything during that time period. Like, I can sit around and write however much I want to write. Just as a hobby or whatever, but
it does hurt Ryan. I mean, it's not good. It's not good for any of us because what's going to happen is there's going to be a lot of people now that are not writing their movies, and they're going to be writing spec scripts. A couple weeks after the strike ends, if that goes on for, I mean, I think it's going to go on for at least a few months. But if the strike ends after 4 months or 5 months, all of a sudden, all these big-time A-list writers are going to come out there with their spec scripts, and then the guys who are new and don't have as much attention are going to come out, competing with those guys.
Yeah.
So it's just, it really is bad for everybody. I hate the fact that we have to do it. I really feel for all the people that are hurt by this. But for the future of writers, for the young writers who are just starting out, for Ryan in 20 years to be able to be making some decent money off of his work, for all these new guys that are in film schools across the country who want to make a decent living at this, we need to do it now, or otherwise it's just going to be for the all time, because the internet's going to be the way that we watch most of our entertainment in 5 to 10 years, and so that's what we're trying to fight.
Very well said. James Gunn and Ryan Esslinger, both part of the St. Louis International Film Festival. Ryan Esslinger is the graduate of Parkway Central High School, whose second movie is When a Man Falls in the Forest. It'll be showing at 7:30 tonight at the St. Louis Art Museum. It stars Sharon Stone and Timothy Hutton and Pruitt Taylor Vance and Dylan Baker. His first movie was called Madness and Genius. And I read online, Ryan, that you paid for it with your job, with the money you saved from your job at Best Buy and Wild Oats. Is that true?
Oh, yeah.
How long do you have to work at those places? Were you doing a lot of overtime to make movie money?
It was about working for about 4 years, I guess.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, yeah, part-time job during high school.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it was, yeah, Best Buy, Wild Oats, Wells Fargo. Yeah, a bunch of different
out
places.
Out in the valley?
Like that.
Is that where that?
Yeah, the one in Earth City.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, not the...
But the Best Buy out in the valley?
No, that wasn't even open when... I don't know how young you think I am, but no.
You're 26.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it was the one over on Manchester, Ellisville.
Okay.
That area.
All right. So, and you used that money to finance the movie yourself?
Yep. Yeah, that's right.
How'd that work out?
It was good, yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't planned out extremely well because I had about, before I even started post-production, I had about $100 left.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you need to do all different kinds of stuff that costs thousands of dollars, and I didn't really realize that, how much that was going to cost.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I found a way.
But once Sharon Stone got involved in the second movie, there was a little bit more money involved?
A tiny bit more. A fraction more.
Well, that's called When a Man Falls in the Forest, and he'll show that at the St. Louis Art Museum tonight. And we'll keep an eye out for wider distribution for that when it does get released. And James is going to be showing his movie Slither, a very, very, very good horror movie. And, you know, I don't want to insult you, but would you consider Slither a B-movie?
I consider it a horror comedy that harkens back to the fun B movies of the 80s.
B movie style.
It's got a lot of B movie in it,
yeah.
You know. So that's tonight at Webster University at 7:30.
At 7:30,
and then tomorrow I'm going to be showing an old film called The Naked Kiss, a Samuel Fuller film, also at Webster University at 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
They asked me to show one of my favorite movies, so I showed that. And then at 12:45 at the Tivoli on Sunday, I'll be doing a career retrospective Q&A with Scott Foundas from LA Weekly.
Mm-hmm. So there'll be a lot of trauma talk there.
Perhaps, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, writer's strike notwithstanding, what else do you have coming up? What else are you going to be doing? Do you have
I'm working on this movie called Pets with Ben Stiller, so I'm right in the middle of that. My brothers and I are doing some original content for Xbox.
What happened to the Spy versus Spy movie?
Spy versus Spy is the first screenplay I was hired to write by the studio now, you know, 7 or 8 years ago. It comes back occasionally, but basically it's long gone.
All right. Well, I wish you both the best of luck with your careers. It's been fun spending time with you. Congratulations on your award, James.
Thank you.
And I hope you both get to write something really good and get it made and turned into something major soon.
Yeah.
And I hope you get a really big trophy for it, one that you really want.
I really want the Cinema St. Louis.
I'm sure you do.
More than anything.
They're going to take it back.
Ryan Esslinger and James Gunn here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.